I got the red-eyed unemployed workers' desperation blues.
Why does a wealthy country like Australia allow its unemployed workers to struggle in poverty without trying to create jobs? You may well ask. Unemployed Workers Fight Back is the Australian Unemployed Workers Union program, part of the SUA program, on every second Friday of the month, 5:30 p.m. on 3CR Community Radio. Our social security system is being defunded, privatised and dismantled, and the poor and vulnerable are being criminalised and trampled upon. The Australian Unemployed Workers Union is focused on helping unemployed and underemployed workers deal effectively with the job agencies, empowering them to fight back for their rights. Remember, Unemployed Workers Fight Back every second Friday of the month at 5:30 p.m. on 3CR Community Radio. Good afternoon, I'm Valerie Farfalla, and you're on Unemployed Workers Fight Back, which is part of the SUWA program. As we said, every second Friday of the month at 5:30 p.m. from the Australian Unemployed Workers Union. And today my guests are Owen Bennett, President of the Australian Unemployed Workers Union, who will give us a roundup of a busy couple of weeks' news on the unemployment front. Emma Dawson, Chief Executive of Per Capita, to talk about their research commissioned by Anglicare Australia. And journalist Jeremy Poxon, who wrote an excellent piece for New Matilda recently entitled How Our Government Helps the Rich Get Richer and the Poor Get Poorer. And Jeremy will also talk about an unemployed worker's enormous struggle to get the disability support pension. Jeremy is also from the AUWU. Meanwhile, while I get in touch and contact Owen Bennett, let's have a song. This one is Laundry Bag Blues from the band Who Knew Too Much.
Doing a load at my place. I've been living right out of my suitcase, and I don't care much for hotels. They never offer to wash your dirty clothes, and they never seem to know about no laundry. Well, I've been trucking it around the world, New York, Paris, London. I've even been to laundries in Brazil. It's glamorous, I know. Why doesn't someone write a show about my pillowcase and dirty socks on Broadway? Round, round, my clothes go round.
So I'm now talking to Owen Bennett. Good day, Owen.
Good day, Barry.
Oh, I know you haven't been well today, so I'm thrilled that you're able to talk to us today. We've got a few issues I want to raise with you. One is work for the dole. Then I'd like to talk to you about the round table with Ed Husick. Then perhaps about the Centrelink robo-debt program accused of enforcing illegal debts. And then just basically about the Greens proposal for a universal basic income. So much has happened the last couple of weeks, hasn't it?
Yes, it has been very busy, and we've been very busy organising this Work for the Dole event as well.
Now, can you tell us about this? It's a very sad commemoration of Josh Park Fing, 2 years since he died tragically at his Work for the Dole site in Toowoomba. Can you tell us about that, please, Owen?
Yes, sure. Well, 2 years ago, Josh Park Fing, an 18-year-old kid, was forced to do Work for the Dole in Toowoomba, and he was told by his Work for the Dole host and the coordinator there that he had to ride on a flatbed trailer that was being towed by a tractor without a harness. And Josh thought that he had to do that, and as he was riding on the back of this flatbed trailer without a harness or any sort of safety instructions, he fell off and hit his head and tragically died.
That's terrible.
What we've been informed about since that tragic event is that the person driving the tractor actually wasn't comfortable driving the tractor and was threatened with a penalty if they refused to drive the tractor. And then after that, we're also told that Josh had an injury that he suffered at the Work for the Dole site before that, and he went to his job agency, NITO, to ask them what he could do about this dangerous site that he was attending, and he had some questions about the safety there, and they said there was too much paperwork, and told him he had to continue to attend at that activity. And a few weeks later, he died. So this is what's happening across Australia, the work of the Dole site, and it's just tragic, and it's a really scathing indictment on this government and the approach it has to unemployed workers. And we're going to make a very strong statement next Thursday on the two-year anniversary of Josh's death that this event must not be allowed to happen again. But it doesn't look like the government are taking this seriously. We've got a few examples of that where they haven't actually released the report into Josh's death, despite telling the family that they were going to release the report within a month. We're still waiting for that report. And not only that, they've expanded the Work for the Dole program. And they haven't given us any indication that they're actually looking into the safety of this program or said what they're going to do to make sure events like this don't happen again. And we're just seeing injuries occur routinely at Work for the Dole sites. We get people calling our hotline, having suffered injuries or having to be subjected to dangerous sites. So we know on the ground that nothing has changed, and it's only a matter of time for another tragic incident like this happens again. And that's why we need to build a movement demanding that something is done. Work for the Dole be scrapped. It's a punitive program. It's designed simply to punish. And not only that, it's designed in a way where the basic safety rights of people aren't being respected.
It's outrageous, really, isn't it? And does Labor have a view on that? I understood that the opposition was going to saying they closed down Work for the Dole. Is that likely?
They haven't gone that far, unfortunately. What they've said at the moment is that they're questioning the activity, and they don't believe that the current coalition government are running the activity in the best way. So what Labor are essentially saying is that we can run Work for the Dole better, but they're not saying that we believe the activity is punitive, which it is. The idea of forcing unemployed workers to work for nothing, and if they don't work, cutting them off their new start, or if they question the safety, cutting them off their new start, that whole picture is completely wrong, and it's something that we should not tolerate in Australia or anywhere else. And the Labor Party, we've seen some encouraging signs from them, but they need to do a lot more to come out and basically say, we're scrapping this program, and that's what we're going to be asking of them. At this forum, we've got a Labor Party representative who will be speaking on this issue. Lisa Chesters, who's the Member of Parliament out in Bendigo, is coming down to address the forum. And we'll be very interested to hear what Lisa Chesters has to say about what the ALP is going to be doing. And I really encourage everyone to come down to this forum and, you know, ask questions of Lisa Chesters. And Adam Bandt from the Greens will also be there. We need to get our elected representatives actually pushing the government on this question, pushing them to shut down this punitive and dangerous program. The time is now.
It certainly is. So you've got Maddie Sutton, Turner Freeman lawyers, Adam Bandt, the Greens, Simeon Casey, and a panel of Work for the Dole participants, which is really good.
Yes, I think that's very important, that we hear from the unemployed people who attend these activities. So we're going to start the event. This is next Tuesday, 2 p.m. We're going to start the event.
Is it Thursday or Tuesday?
Did I say Tuesday?
Yes.
I meant Thursday. That's right. Thursday, the 19th, and we're going to get a panel of five unemployed workers. We're going to start it off, make sure these politicians have to hear what the experiences are like for people on the ground who have to go to these Work for the Dole activities. What is it like? I'm not sure many politicians actually understand what it is like to have to go to a Work for the Dole activity, and the humiliation of rocking up to an activity unpaid and just doing the same task over and over again, or in many cases no task at all.
And they say it's training people for work, don't they? That there's, it's ridiculous. That's going to be at the Unitarian Peace Church, 110 Gray Street, East Melbourne, from 3 p.m. to 7 p.m.
Actually, it starts at 2 p.m.
That's 2 p.m. now. Oh, good. Yes. Okay, that's good that you've got that through. Look, just linking in with that, you know, the Centrelink robo-debt program, has been accused of enforcing illegal debts. And
yes.
I just wanted to link that in because the former AAT member who ran a study into this, an academic paper by Professor Terry Carney, he accused Centrelink of failing to defend the legality of debts in the AAT and suggests the tribunal should set aside debts until the agencies proved the amounts are correct. If we've got someone strong like Terry Carney on the Work for the Dole problems, maybe that would be a good thing, because Carney's really got a lot of credibility, hasn't he?
Yes, he is a very good academic, but what we've seen again and again in this area, Valerie, is that no matter how much evidence we have demonstrating how punitive and how humiliating this system is for unemployed workers, the robo-debt is one example where it's shown to have a 20% failure rate of debts. And with Work for the Dole, another example, it's been shown to have 64% of sites not meeting basic safety standards. Or then there's job agencies. They've been shown that 50% of the penalties they impose on people are wrong. But we've seen it again and again. There's so much evidence that's been collected by people like Terry Carney and by the Unemployed Workers Union and by a lot of allies of ours. We keep collecting this data. We keep putting it in the news or on our Facebook, on our website, but the government just refused to listen. Doesn't matter how strong we make this argument, they don't seem to care. So that's why we have to take it a step further. We have to start getting people on the ground. We have to start attending events and building more of a direct action movement, because you can have the most convincing argument on paper, but if the government doesn't feel threatened electorally, if they don't feel threatened in their actual electorates, then they're not going to care. So that's one of the hard lessons that we've found, and I think it's a lesson that people need to learn more in this area, in the social security rights area, is that unless you actually threaten the government in a particular way, you pose a particular, you have strength in numbers, then the government is going to ignore you. And that's what they've done consistently. So that's why this Work for the Dole Forum, I think, is a really important point for people to rally and get behind the Unemployed Workers Union in our attempts to scrap Work for the Dole and to build a direct action movement. So we're, after the Work for the Dole Forum, for example, we're having a Work for the Dole action group. We're going to meet together and we're going to discuss what are the weak points of the government. How can we effectively push the government to scrap this program? Because every government has a weak point. We just need to find it and exploit it. Yeah. And that's the important thing to do. That can't be done through theoretical arguments. It has to be done on the ground, through organizing work, through doing the hard yards. And I encourage all the listeners out there who are fed up with being this sort of government, the government's approach to Social Security recipients, they're fed up with the way they punish, humiliate people. We need to act. We need to act now.
We certainly do. And so, given that, I think there's also holding events in Melbourne, Sydney and Brisbane demanding the government finally release the report into Josh's death and shut down the dangerous and punitive program. Now, just moving on to the round table you attended with Ed Husic recently, re the job agencies, what was your conclusion from that meeting? Do you think Ed Husic will be useful to the Unemployed Workers Union?
Well, yes, I do, Valerie, and for the listeners who might not be aware, Ed Husic is the Shadow Minister for Employment Services, but he's the Labor Party Minister responsible for job agencies, and the Unemployed Workers Union has been doing a lot of its work on job agencies and making sure unemployed workers know their rights when they go to job agencies, and job agencies don't bully people. But what we've seen across the board is job agencies are just seeing unemployed people as walking dollar signs and just trying to exploit them for as much money as they possibly can. And if that means bullying them or forcing them to attend unfair activities, pushing them into Work for the Dole when they shouldn't, punishing them for refusing to attend dangerous Work for the Dole sites, there's a whole array of criminality that's been going on in job agencies. And what we've been asking Ed Husic is to fix this mess. And I feel that this roundtable that Ed Husic held in Melbourne was a really good opportunity for the Unemployed Workers Union to
tell Ed Husic what the experience of our members are like at job agencies, and it was a very encouraging start to developing a relationship with the Labor Party, so they will take into account the experiences of unemployed workers, but when you're, because they need to take into account these experiences when they develop a new contract for job agencies. So if the Labor Party do get elected, one of the first things they'll have to do is develop a new contract for the job agency system, which is a huge billion-dollar industry, and we need to make sure that next contract is fair, or as fair as we can possibly get it. But as I said before, Valerie, we're in the same position where, unless we have strength, the Labor Party, just like the Coalition, can just ignore us. So we need to make sure that we can effectively lobby the Labor Party, and by doing that, we need strength in numbers. We need to show that we are the representative of the unemployed workers, and if they don't do what we want them to do, we can actually hurt them electorally.
Yes, now I understand Ed Husic is still committed to the idea of mutual obligation and the idea that welfare payments should be conditional on recipients jumping through hoops. That is, he thinks it's acceptable, for example, to breach unemployed people and some of those punitive things that our current government is doing. So in some ways, they're very similar, the two governments.
Yes, well, that's something that people often forget, is that the ALP are the ones who devised this whole activation system. This is what they call it, activation. Forcing unemployed people to attend an extreme amount of appointments, activities and training and all these other predominantly useless activities that they push unemployed workers into and then punish them if they dare question. This was actually introduced in the late 80s by the Hawke government and then continued by Keating. And then when John Howard came around, it was very easy for him to expand this punitive employment services industry, and that's when he privatised the whole thing. And this has just been continued again by the Rudd government, and once again the Abbott and Turnbull governments have expanded it, made it more punitive. So judging by this historical sort of picture, if the Labor government does get in, it's very, very likely that they're just going to once again commit to this idea that unemployed workers should have to run around jumping through hoops, and if they question it or they fail to do that, then they punish them and take away their income, which is a very, very punitive system. And it's one that we need to fight against, because unemployed workers deserve dignity and we need to fight for their rights to access Social Security. But both sides of Parliament are attacking that right of unemployed workers to a dignified life and to ability to access Social Security.
Particularly so, with the recent, even more punitive welfare bills that were introduced, Social Security bills.
Yes, and those bills are shocking. I mean, when you look at those bills, the way that they're giving more and more powers to job agencies, even though we know how punitive and how many penalties are being imposed, more penalties than ever are being imposed on unemployed workers. And what does the government do? They decide to give more powers to job agencies to penalise people. More financial penalties will be introduced. Work for the dole is more dangerous than it's ever been. So what does the government do? They expand it. So this is what's happening, and it's the worst time in our history to be unemployed. And the Labor Party are very quiet about, you know, all these very punitive aspects to our system of treating unemployed workers. And the idea of having any sort of dignity to your life as an unemployed worker seems to have been forgotten. And it's a system of punishment. And you have to remember, you have to think why. I mean, unemployed workers are unemployed due to no fault of their own. It's the fault of the economy. It's the fault of their lack of jobs. So it's a scapegoating mechanism. They're trying to blame unemployed workers for what is essentially the government's own failure to create enough work to go around. So we need to make that point and say, if you can't create enough jobs for people, then at the bare minimum, you should allow these people, allow unemployed workers to live in dignity, give them a decent provision. At the moment, New Start, it's about $400 per fortnight below the poverty line. Shocking for a country.
Oh, yes.
For any country. And then they're forcing to attend all these dangerous work, the dole activities, and not making any effort to create jobs for people. So it's a really, really tough time for unemployed workers, and this is it's very deliberate. Both sides of politics really support this approach, and we need to gather our allies and gather our strength to try to fight this punitive approach.
You know, it's interesting. I found an article in the SMH by John Hewson. As you know, the professor at Crawford School of Public Policy, ANU, and a former Liberal opposition leader, and this was in May last year. And I just want to summarise a couple of things that he said. He was actually wanting, he said, it's time for a mature and apolitical welfare debate. He said, discussion of our welfare system are riddled with inaccuracies and fake news. And he said, the classic is the annual attack on the unemployed, you know, the layabouts and couch potatoes, reluctant to attend job interviews, using their dole to sustain a certain lifestyle. So he was really against that, and he did understand a lot about it. And he said, finally, genuine welfare reform must also include a willingness to increase the base New Start and pension benefits to at least an accepted poverty line. Given its budgetary significance, it's time for a mature, apolitical welfare debate. So he was right then, and of course, especially now, and the government doesn't seem to care. But just on to one other thing I wanted to touch base with you on, which is the Greens leader recently, Richard Di Natale, proposed a radical overhaul of Australia's welfare system through the introduction of a universal basic income scheme. Now, we've been talking about that at the Australian Unemployed Workers Union for quite some time, and he gave a speech at the National Press Club outlining why he thought the current social security system was inadequate. But, of course, he got a lot of protests from the Australian newspaper and others, and also from the New Daily, which said the Greens' right-wing way to help the unemployed. So the writer there, Rob Burgess, slammed it for being really right-wing at its heart. What's your view on the UBI?
It's a really interesting debate that's going on at the moment, and I think a lot of it is quite superficial. I think that the universal basic income, the idea behind it, is very broad. There are very many different variations on it, and it's impossible to talk about it as a sort of one idea because there are many different parts to it. And for example, Milton Friedman in the 70s, who's a big conservative, you know, very famous conservative economist, he came up with a sort of universal basic income idea in the 70s. And that was a very, very conservative right-wing idea. And then there are other people on the left who come up who have proposed other sort of universal basic income ideas. So from the perspective of the Unemployed Workers Union, I feel like the universal basic income is very... it offers a good opportunity to question the conditionality of Social Security. So as we've been discussing, the way Social Security is really framed at the moment is that in order to get what should be an entitlement, you have to meet a whole range of different what are called mutual obligation requirements. You have to attend all these pointless appointments, attend all these punitive and dangerous work for the dole activities, and so on. So what the universal basic income is saying is that we get rid of all that and we just give unemployed workers an entitlement, and there are no strings attached to that. And I think that is a very healthy proposition to be talking about. And from that perspective, I'm very interested in encouraging of universal basic income, because it does undermine this horrible conditionality that we've seen come up in Social Security. But on the other hand, I do think there are limitations with universal basic income. I feel that, to a degree, it's letting the government off the hook when it comes to job creation. I feel that the government can create jobs for everybody, mm-hmm. and simply giving people an entitlement isn't enough. I think that...
It could be whittled away too, couldn't it, with other rising costs, and they might end up just really poor.
That's right. There are risks involved. And while I would say it certainly would be an improvement today if you could say that we would be able to get rid of the conditionality, that would mean hundreds and thousands of unemployed workers would breathe a huge sigh of relief knowing that they haven't got their job agency breathing down their neck, cutting them off every second week. That would be a huge victory for the unemployed, because these bullies are just harassing unemployed workers. These bullies at job agencies and the government more broadly, just making it so hard to survive. So that would be a very good thing to see. But just generally, we need to think of the big picture. And in the mind of the Unemployed Workers Union, we want to see government job creation. We want to see people being able to fulfill their potential. So government creates socially necessary jobs that help people. And people are given the opportunity to work in jobs that they want to work in. And it doesn't seem like a really radical idea, but this is something that no one really likes to talk about, that the government creating jobs that are socially necessary, well-paid, secure, and allowing people to do those jobs that they want to do. That's the kind of society that the unemployed workers would like to see, that no one is denied an opportunity to do the jobs they want to do that's socially necessary. These aren't just dot jobs, digging holes, or boring jobs where you're just typing on a computer for 8 hours a day. These are good jobs that are socially necessary. What I mean by that, they meet social need.
Yeah.
And that's something the government could do tomorrow. And as some of the listeners may know, there's an economist called Bill Mitchell who suggests the government create a job for everybody at their local council doing socially necessary tasks that benefit that local council. And that could be environmental protection, it could be social work. There's so much need out there in the community. We see it every time you walk out the door. You can see that people are hurting and they need support. And that's what the government could do if they want to. There's no restriction on them financially. All this nonsense about having to balance the budget and have a surplus budget is completely wrong. They could, if they wanted to, employ everybody tomorrow, but they don't. So I guess to summarise, I think that there are aspects of the universal basic income that are good, but I don't think it goes far enough in terms of creating the kind of society that...
We need a discussion about it, a debate, an open debate about it. I think that would be a good idea.
Yes, and I don't think we should approach it as one or the other either. I think that there are elements of both, elements of the UBI that are good, elements of creating work for everyone that are good, and it is complex, and it's... I think let's try and look at the facts a little bit more, but on the whole, I think there's a lot of people out there who want the same thing. They want a dignified life for everybody, and it's about trying to work towards that. And I think there's aspects of UBI that do that, and there's aspects of the full employment, creating work for everyone, that does that as well.
All right. Well, look, Owen, thank you very much, Owen Bennett, for talking with Unemployed Workers Fight Back today. And just to repeat, everyone, next Thursday, there's a Justice for Josh. What would you call it?
It's a memorial and a forum event.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes.
It runs from 2 until 7 at the Unitarian Peace Church, 110 Gray Street, East Melbourne. Is it free?
It's free for unemployed and underemployed workers, but for waged people, it would be $10.
Okay. Thank you very much, Owen.
And I should say that just to confirm, the speakers include Lisa Chesters from the ALP, Adam Bant from the Greens, Maddie Sutton from Turner Freeman Lawyers, who's actually representing somebody who suffered a horrific injury at work with a doll, Michael Smart, who's also attending the event, will be talking about his experiences, and Mike Nelson, who's an OH&S expert, will be talking about work for the dole and the legal aspect as well, and a whole panel of unemployed workers, and that'll be followed by a work for the dole action group, where we're going to concentrate on what can we do to shut this dangerous and punitive activity down.
All right. Thanks very much. We'll see you later.
Thank you, Barry.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
I'm not sitting here because I want to be here. I hate being on the street. I can't stand it.
Believe me, people don't have much sympathy for sick people in this city.
I've been on the streets about 5 years.
Where is the support system? Is there people out there who you can turn to for help, for advice, for guidance?
I want to take my kids here. I want to go to the Easter show. I want to do all these kinds of things, but I'm so limited to what I can do.
There are those that probably do need a lot of help, and there are probably not enough help out there for it.
There needs to be resources put into services. There needs to be specific services that are dealing with homelessness.
It's real rough. Yeah, I'd hate to wish homelessness on anybody.
The truth is, it's very hard work to be a homeless person. You want to try it sometime.
They don't support us with nothing. Do you know what I mean? We just put it at the back of the bus and just going, oh yeah, do this, and you'll be right.
You know, a lot of them have had really difficult lives.
And then in the end, it's the people you don't know that are going to help you the most.
But maybe there needs to be a better support system, you know, to sort of get them back on their feet, get them back into employment.
Oh, I've been ready for change and ready for help for a long time.
Like, it's really difficult to go and get a job if you don't have a roof over your head.
Is that when people are engaged as human beings, then they get involved in finding their own right answers, and that's the important part of this mystery.
Listening to Get Up, Stand Up with Bob Marley, and I hope we'll have more of Bob Marley later, but at the moment I want to speak to Emma Dawson, Chief Executive of Per Capita, to talk about their research commissioned by Anglicare Australia. How are you, Emma?
I'm very well, Valerie. How are you?
Good. I was so excited to read about this research and an article by Casey Chambers, the Chief Executive of Anglicare, and she couldn't talk today because she's lost her voice. She'd probably been...
Yes, but I've only just got mine back after a cold earlier this week, but I'm glad at least one of us could talk to you today.
I'm very appreciative. I thought she might have lost her voice because she's probably been engaged in much talk this week regarding this terrific report that you've done. It was commissioned by Anglicare Australia, and it shows that each year a staggering $68 billion is spent keeping the wealthiest households wealthy.
Yes.
And what about the poor people?
Well, that's the reason we published this report. So $68 billion was the amount we found, the value of the foregone revenue, the revenue that's not collected by the government in tax from the wealthy because of tax concessions that are available. Perfectly legal tax concessions. So no one making use of them is breaking the law, but they use those tax concessions, of course, to reduce their taxable income. And so that's money that the budget might otherwise see and might otherwise be able to collect to fund services to the rest of us. So while we're not suggesting that anyone using those tax concessions is doing the wrong thing legally, we think the system is very unfairly skewed towards the wealthy and against the poor.
Definitely. Apparently concessions on superannuation, for example, negatively gearing investment properties to minimise taxable income, getting tax breaks for private schools and private health insurance, and then capital gains tax exemptions. There are quite a few, aren't there?
There are quite a few. All of the ones you've mentioned are used extensively and predominantly by the wealthy 20%. And perhaps the most striking one, Valerie, is the use of family trusts, where people set up a family trust and use that to split their income, the income of a high income earner, perhaps almost certainly almost always the father, to assign income to other members of the family, and then they all pay as though they're individual taxpayers. And we found that that trust system is actually used almost exclusively by the top 20% of wealthy people in this country.
And perhaps these people would argue that they're not wealthy, and they may not be, they may be blissfully unaware at the inequality that's happening.
I think that's right. I think, you know, people don't tend to realise how well off they are in Australia. That actually, you know, the average income is considerably less than people think it is. And that people that, and we hear all the time in the media and from politicians that a family on $150,000 a year is doing it tough with a mortgage in Sydney or Melbourne. And no one's suggesting that a family of four who's got a big mortgage and is bringing in that kind of money is, you know, rolling in cash. But that's not actually who we're talking about here. We're talking about people who are even wealthier than that. And there's a significant number of them. But certainly compared to people, as our report demonstrated, who might be living on a disability support payment and have one parent working part-time with another parent that's full-time on the DSP, or people most disadvantaged that are living on our shockingly low rate of unemployment benefit, Newstart, we can expect a family of four where both parents are on Newstart, they're living on about $42,000 a year.
And they're meant to pay rent, and rent's huge.
Yes, that includes their rent assistance. So they're, you know, you're thinking about supporting a family of four, including rent, food, electricity bills, transport, school costs. Even if your kids are in public school, we all know there are still costs to send them there. Living on around $800 a week, they're doing it pretty tough. So we'd suggest if the government's looking for savings in the budget, they should stop cracking down on people on Newstart as they did recently with the so-called welfare reform bill, and perhaps look at some of these tax concessions for the wealthy.
Well, it's such a punitive system, as you know, the demerit system for Centrelink recipients, expanding the cashless welfare trial, penalising job seekers who miss appointments, and forcing people to run down their bank account before they can seek help. These are really quite outrageous things.
It's brutally oppressive and brutally punitive on people that are, you know, all the statistics show that the vast majority of people on Newstart are on it for a short period of time, but there are people that are stuck on it for longer, and usually those are the most vulnerable people. Nobody chooses to live on Newstart. You know, this myth that there are people that there are so-called gold bludgers, there's no evidence to support that. And we are punishing people when they're at their most vulnerable. The recent changes to legislation around what so-called mutual obligations make it that much harder for people who are living on $273 a week to get by. So we're now saying if you've got a mental health or health issue that is rooted in drug or alcohol abuse, that's no longer an excuse for missing an appointment. But if you miss an appointment, your payments are docked much more quickly than they otherwise were. And they take no account of the fact that you might be unable to attend that appointment because you're caring for a family member or because you simply do not have the money to get the transport to the appointment because of the amount the low amount of money that you're required to live on.
That's right.
We need to stop taking such a punitive approach.
Transport allowances for Work for the Dole are pretty poor too, and you know, might cost $20 a day just to use petrol to get there, and they're required work every day. Look, as you know, the Unemployed Workers Union is really trying to empower people with its Unemployed Workers' Rights booklet to be like a consumer guide, so that when you go to the job agencies, you at least know how to be assertive and find out about your rights. You know,
exactly. It's a terrific initiative and great work that the Unemployed Workers Union is doing, and that per capita, we're working with the AUWU on some research projects to really uncover the experience of people in the job services provider network and how it isn't working to get people into meaningful work, but is really churning people through a system that's as much about ticking a box as anything else. And so I think, you know, the work of the Unemployed Workers Union is really vitally important, and it's shining a light on just how badly we do treat people who've fallen on hard times. And it could be any one of us. You know, most Australians, they don't like to think of themselves as working class, and we have a still relatively strong middle class in Australia, certainly compared to the US. But there aren't many Australians who, if they lost their job tomorrow, have got three months mortgage payments in the bank.
Yeah.
We know that unfortunate events can happen, an injury, an illness, the death of a partner, the loss of a job. And many people are not that far away themselves from being in that situation. And I think it's on all of us to really tell the truth about that and make people see just how unfair it is, and that it could be you, it could be your kids, And do we really want to treat our fellow citizens so punitively?
That's right. And some would argue that the policies, these neoliberal policies, have been intelligently designed to manage and discipline low-income populations while boosting the profits and positions of the economic elite. That would seem to echo what Casey Chambers from Anglicare Australia is saying when she says that really we've become a country that cuts from the poorest to give to the richest.
That's right.
And then the government's obsession with corporate tax cuts again.
$65 billion in corporate tax cuts, but we can't afford to raise the rate of New Start, which only costs the government $10 or $11 billion a year. It's a nonsense. I mean, the $65 billion is over 10 years, but that's foregone revenue. And those multinational companies that are now angling for the tax cuts, they don't need those tax cuts. None of them actually pay anything like 30% in tax. Most of them, some of them pay zero. Most of them pay well below 25%. That is the rate that they're currently asking for. So it's a matter of priorities and it's a matter of choices. And I think, you know, I have been heartened with some of the commitments recently by the Labor government to say, look, they don't think they'll continue with Work for the Dole. They are going to look at some of these tax concessions, the Labor Party, rather, if they were to form government. They are going to look at some of these tax concessions around superannuation, negative gearing, family trusts and so on to try and raise more money. And, of course, that's described in the right-wing press as a tax grab. But what it actually is a way of raising revenue in our tax and transfer system to pay for services to give our citizens a decent quality of life. And that's what a government should be doing, in my view.
I think I saw you on The Drum recently arguing, I forget what it was about, I think it was this week, but I was wondering how you're finding the media response. We know that some of the groups like The Guardian are generally open and interested in social justice and New Matilda, but some of the others, for example, the Murdoch Press, seem to be hounding the unemployed and demonising them.
Look, I think that's true. There is a campaign in some of the Murdoch tabloids. Certainly they came out after the so-called welfare reform bill and lauded it as a crackdown on lazy dole bludgers and welfare cheats, and that was the rhetoric they used, and they tend to do that. They came out with a story in January off the back of a government media release saying that the welfare bill was costing every taxpayer $83 a week. Well, we countered that in our report with Anglicare by saying that the tax concessions for the wealthy are costing every taxpayer $37 a week, and we know who needs it more. So, yes, there is that. Certainly a skewed coverage in some media. This report's been very well received. We had great coverage in the Fairfax papers, in the ABC and The Guardian. It was covered briefly in The Australian as well, but I don't think they're going to be joining our call for a change to the system anytime soon.
All right. Well, look, it's been a pleasure talking to you. I've just been speaking to Emma Dawson, the Chief Executive of Per Capita, talking about their research commissioned by Anglicare Australia. It's really a terrific piece of research that shows that each year a staggering $68 billion is spent keeping the wealthiest households wealthy. And it's very unfair. It's like taking from the poor to give to the rich. So thank you very much, Emma, for being on our program.
Thanks, Valerie. Great to talk to you tonight.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Qu'un animal parmi tant d'autres mammifères, en fait une bête féroce qui n'a plus d'adversaire, juste un roi sans couronne régnant seul sur notre terre. On a poussé les limites de manière volontaire, on va gaspiller ce qu'il reste pour faire des affaires. On a enfoui notre âme comme les déchets qu'on enterre, notre avenir on condamne si maintenant l'on désespère.
Reproduire nos erreurs comme à chaque fois, bâtir un monde meilleur qu'on ne voit pas, épuiser nos
It's a bit sad, isn't it, that we can't hear all of these songs fully. That was Revolution, Dub Inc. And now I'm talking to Jeremy Poxon. How are you, Jeremy?
Good, thanks, Valerie. How are you doing?
Very good. Now, Jeremy's our journalist and media officer at the Australian Unemployed Workers Union. He's been doing some terrific articles, and I was particularly impressed with one he's just written for New Matilda, How Our Government Helps the Rich Get Richer and the Poor Get Poorer. And having just talked with Emma Dawson, Chief Executive of Per Capita, about the research commissioned by Anglicare Australia, this sort of ties in with that. So perhaps we can just talk about your article and what you found in researching that article.
Yeah, so I did. I tried to, obviously we know, you know, about these punitive welfare reforms the government has been pushing through, including increased hours of work for the dole, increased penalties for non-compliance and all that sort of thing. And I was sort of noticing that a lot of the, I guess you'd call it sort of progressive or centre-left kind of pundits in the media were sort of interpreting the government thinking behind these reforms as, you know, sort of dismissing them as either ill-informed or reckless or that kind of thing, whereas I think I and you know, we at the union, at the Unemployed Workers Union, sort of see it, you know, not as misguided, but as a very, you know, calculated, you know, regime set of programs really designed to, you know, not to end unemployment or significantly reduce unemployment or homelessness or anything like that. Nothing so lofty or ambitious, but it's really designed to, I argue in that article, to really manage the poor, keep them servile, and, you know, basically develop that, what Marx called, like, that reserve army of labor for business. And it's, you know, so I, in that article, I used Work for the Dole as my main sort of case study example. You know, this is a program that we know isn't leading unemployed workers into jobs. You know, going from some data I digged up for that article, it's got sitting on about a 2% success rate of Work for the Dole participants landing in real jobs. So if it's not creating work, and the government knows this, why has it chosen in a welfare reform package to double down on that program? And that's kind of a question I tried to dig into for that article. If the government knows it isn't actually concretely leading to work, what could it, you know, possibly be accomplishing by doubling down on such a program? And then obviously when you look into it and you see, you know, the businesses who get a very cheap supply of labor, you see the job agencies able to acquire more and more lucrative contracts to enlist Work for the Dollars and that kind of thing. And once you dig into all that, you sort of get this sense that, you know, these social policies aren't really designed to reduce unemployment. Instead, they seem more designed to manage unemployed workers, specifically their behaviours in service of business interests.
Yeah, I think you make that point really well. You say, in one part of your piece, you say, moral appeals by advocates have seemingly failed to trouble the mind of or hearts of those in power. And you show the example of the new welfare reform package, which will continue dismantling our social safety net. And it's ultimately designed to eject more than 80,000 Australians from income support. It's all about bean counting for anyone on so-called welfare or social security payments. But as you say, it's trying its darndest to gift more tax breaks to the rich. It's very unequal. It's shocking. And as you say, you think it's designed to manage and discipline low-income populations while boosting the profits and positions of the economic elite.
And it's able to do this and, you know, sell this to the public. I sort of argue in two different ways. It sort of appeals to, you know, our sense of, you know, our death obsession and unburdening the budget, as you say. And, you know, they've done up all the figures on how much money they're gonna save by, you know, kicking 80,000 New Start recipients off payments. But also there's that other And that's one side of it, but there's also the other side of the coin, whereby, you know, as we all know, I think job snobs is the new phrase. They like to roll out this sort of individual demonizing of the poor, and that whole spiel they like to wheel out as they cut payments about how, you know, unemployed workers are individually responsible and all that sort of narrative. And that helped, you know, about three decades worth of that constant narrative about whatever it is, bludges, job snobs, et cetera.
Goes back to that.
Really helps these reforms along as well.
That idea that it's a charity, that somehow we don't have a right to have a job. It's we're living off the charity and the goodwill of the government. It's terrible. Now, I also wanted to talk to you about someone you helped recently in dealing with job agencies, who was finally able to get a disability support pension. Can you mention that to us as well?
Yeah, I can. So his name's Kwang Hui. He's so I've been for the last several months, actually, I've been sort of researching and digging into the disability support pension and how tough it is now for applicants to actually get onto it. And I think, and what I found is really, it's really been alarming and staggering. And I've, you know, been surprised this hasn't blown up more, although I keep trying to write about it and get it noticed. But essentially, this guy, Kwang, he's a young man from Dandenong, contacted me. He's a type 2 diabetic who's blind in the left eye, has trouble walking more than about 100 meters.
Oh,
he's got severe heart, kidney, liver problems.
You couldn't get the disability. God.
And yeah, and that's the punchline of this anecdote. He'd been trying unsuccessfully for about 2 years to make applications for the disability support pension, and they kept getting rejected because he'd get these vague letters from Centrelink that he wasn't, you know, supplying the right kind of evidence, but they wouldn't, you know, they sort of deliberately, it seems, wouldn't tell him what he actually needed to provide. So after, and this poor guy, so on top of, you know, having to be in hospital about once every couple of months, he's having to sort of scrounge together enough material, enough documents, enough letters from his doctors to show them. And this really came to a head very recently at the start of this year, where he told me he actually went into his Dandenong Centrelink waving one of his doctor's certificates, which said on it, you know, this man cannot work. Literally, I saw the certificate. He sort of describes this farcical scene where he walked into it and he was like stumbling around in the Centrelink trying to wave
could you believe
his certificates at them, and they, you know, they told him to essentially hit the road. But thankfully, he got in touch with me just a few days ago to tell me that finally they had accepted his medical reports, all his doctor's evidence. So it took him essentially 2 years of really steadfastly trying to make applications, make appeals for rejected applications. And the Unemployed Workers Union, who does have a DSP officer now, you know, did help him along as well. And I wrote about his story a few times for Crikey. So, you know, it's a sad story about the state of the disability pension and how hard government sort of welfare crackdown is on disabled Australians in our community. But you've got to give it up for people like this. And I figure there's many others like him who are sort of silently battling away against the system to try and get entitlements that, you know, they're exactly entitled to.
Well, look, thank you very much for talking to Unemployed Workers Fight Back today, Jeremy Poxon. We'll have you on again. Thanks very much.
All right. Hello.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
Located in the heart of Thornbury, the Islamic Museum of Australia showcases the cultural and artistic heritage of Australian Muslims. Don't miss our latest youth-based exhibition, Ways to Be Muslim, and immerse yourself in a series of photographic portraits and unique personal narratives. This exhibition is hosted in partnership with Muslim Collective and the Victorian State Government and is showing until July 8th. Visit the museum website for more information. The Islamic Museum of Australia is a 3CR supporter.
So it's nearly time for me to go. You've been with Valerie Farfalla and Unemployed Workers Fight Back, which is part of the SUWA program every second Friday of each month at 5:30 from the Australian Unemployed Workers Union. And there's one special, I haven't got much time, but there's a special announcement. The Frankston branch of the AUWU is holding a conference on Sunday, the 22nd of April. It's at the back of the Frankston. It's in the Frankston Library, which is the back of the Civic Centre there. It's going to be a terrific conference with different speakers. We've got even Joe Toscano from 3CR, and I'll be speaking there too on unemployed workers' rights and our booklet and other Centrelink issues. And hopefully there'll be some really good speakers on what's going on with Centrelink at the moment. So it starts at 11 o'clock. So if you're living down that way, please drop in. It'd be well worth the conference. AUWU Frankston Branch, Frankston Library, just behind the Civic Centre there.